We're ready to start another week of our 4.5 year verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired Word. Let's open our Bibles to Exodus chapter 25, and we're going to reread and start at verse number 22 in a moment. First of all, let me remind you about the Ark of the Covenant being a throne of God. It is a sedan chair. It is a portable throne. You should quit thinking of it, as it's often represented, as some sort of highly decorated storage box, because that's not what it is. It's God's throne on earth. And my personal belief is that it will also be the eternal throne of Jesus Christ on the new earth, that it will be not just his millennial throne, but his eternal throne. And so my expectation is that all of us will be able to see this very Ark of the Covenant with our own eyes throughout eternity. And I'm looking forward to seeing how much the reality surpasses my imagination. So in Moses' description, he talks about, or he's given from God, a basic box form. This box is effectively, 4 feet and 3.5 or 3 3/4 inches wide, because we're thinking about this as a throne. It's then another 2 feet 7 inches deep, and it's 2 feet 7 inches high from the floor. It's covered completely in gold, but it has a special seat that is put on the top of it. This seat is made of one big chunk of gold that is beaten out and designed into a topper for the box itself, with a couple of decorative four-winged, four-faced angelic beings on each side of the throne seat, with two of their wings at least, you know, so one pair of their wings going up and over and meeting above the throne seat like a canopy. And so it's a very special looking portable throne. The Ark of the Covenant is going to have the Ten Commandments, the original edition. Well, actually, it'll end up with the second God-made edition put inside of it. The golden pot of manna will be put inside of it. And eventually, the power rod being used by Moses and Aaron will also be put inside of it. So those three items will be inside the box seat of this portable throne. So quit imagining the pictures you see with the little winged lions. Those are Assyrian lions, and those designs come from much later in history. And don't think of it as two kneeling angels looking, you know, like they're in prayer, facing face down toward the seat, because that's the way people imagined it, as a highly decorative box. And they usually put the carrying rods along the long sides of the ark when they did that. And I disagree. This is a chariot without wheels. That's what David will later refer to it. It's a sedan chair. It's a portable throne. And these carrying rods are along the short sides of the ark, so that 12 priests, three on the end of each stick, rod, can carry God's throne from place to place. And when the tabernacle is finished, the Ark of God will be placed inside the Holy of Holies, the throne room portion of the tabernacle, and these poles will stick forward into the holy place where the priests do their ministry every single day, and the poles will be out on either side of the altar of incense that we will talk about later. And apparently, this is my guess again, these poles will be holding back the curtains that go between the holy and most holy place, so that the priests will be able to see past the incense altar into the throne room of God and right at the mercy seat of God. Because this is what we know that is supposed to represent. This is from verse 22 of Exodus 25. "There I will meet with you from above the mercy seat, from between the two cherubim that are on the Ark of the Testimony. I will speak with you about all that I will give you in commandment for the people of God." So when God speaks, his voice emanates from between the cherubim above the mercy seat of the Ark of the Covenant, effectively right where the mouth of a king would be if he were seated upon that throne. That's where the voice will sound like it's coming from as he speaks to Moses from the tabernacle. And so I just find that very interesting, very exciting to picture the Ark of the Covenant in that fashion, as the throne of God on earth. Verse 23, we now move to a second item that's going to be put inside the tabernacle building once it's finished. Verse 23 says, "You shall take or make a table of acacia wood." The acacia wood is very durable. They have a good supply of it, apparently. And it is easy to work with. So make a table. 2 cubits shall be its length. So it's 3 feet, 5.4 inches wide. A cubit in its breadth. That's the distance from front to back as you're facing it. And a cubit and a half its height. So it's about 1 foot and 8.7 inches wide on top, and then it's about 2 feet 7 inches off the ground. So it's a fairly low table. It's not like a coffee table height, but it is a good height for a table. Now, what's this going to be for? This is what they're going to put the bread and the incense and the wine offerings on during the week of service. And the bread and the cups of wine, probably the incense as well, will be swapped out once a week. And we'll talk more about that when we get to those details later, because I think it's highly symbolic. Now, just like with the ark, verse 24, "You shall overlay it with pure gold, make a molding of gold around it," so it's got a nice decoration around the top of it, "and you shall make a rim around it a hand breadth wide." So apparently this is a tray top to kind of keep things inside the top. And a hand breadth, if you look at your hand, that's the distance between the bottom of your little finger to the bottom of your pointer finger, and it's roughly 3 inches. And it's going to be a hand breadth wide and a molding of gold around that rim. The molding here seems to be some sort of probably raised decoration. "And you shall make for it 4 rings of gold and fasten the rings to the 4 corners of its 4 legs." So this is for transport, just like with the ark. Close to the frame, the ring shall lie as holders for the poles to carry the table. So it's going to be used to move the table from campsite to campsite before it's placed into the tabernacle. And it would appear as if these poles will be removed whenever the table is put in place. Verse number 27, close to the frame, the ring shall lie as holders for the poles to carry the table. You shall make the poles of acacia wood, overlay them with gold, and the table shall be carried with these. Then you shall make its plates and its dishes for incense. So we know there's incense placed on this altar. We'll discover later that incense represents prayer. It's offered in connection with prayer. And so a good supply of incense is always important to have right there at the table. Its flagons and bowls with which to pour drink offerings. Those are the wine offerings that will be offered on a regular basis. So these also will be kept on the top of this table. And verse 30, you shall set the bread of the presence on the table before me regularly as in once a week, and the bread stays there all week long. Now we know later that it's 12 loaves, flat loaves, rounded flat loaves, that are going to be there. Each one of them represents one of the 12 tribes of Israel. And the symbolism seems to be that the people of God are always represented in the presence of God. Now, I can't help it. I want to jump ahead a little bit. It would appear that the bread and the cups of wine, probably the incense as well, were all swapped out for fresh things on Sunday, the beginning of a new week. Probably Saturday night after the sun went down, these things were swapped out. And the priests that were going off duty from the previous week and the priests that were going on duty for this new week, they had kind of served together on the Sabbath day. And so they together would end the Sabbath day and start the first day of the week by eating the old showbread or the old bread of the presence and drinking the old wine. And that sounds so very much like communion to me. It sounds exactly like a weekly observance of the bread and the cup. And so I think the symbolism of the fellowship, the participation in this weekly association with God shouldn't be missed. All right, on to the next item. Verse 31. You shall make a lampstand of pure gold. You need light inside of this building in order to see what you're doing. So the lampstand shall be made of hammered work. We'll discover later it's actually made of one big giant chunk of gold, kind of like the mercy seat. Its base, so the thing that provides the standing of it all. Its cups. Now, the cups we will discover are going to be the holding or the platform for where the lamp will be placed. These are not lamps themselves. The lamps are separate from the lampstand. So the cup is probably some sort of recessed area that you can put a lamp that is fitted to it so that it's nice and stable. Its calyxes, which is a plant reference. The calyx is the little green bits underneath a flower that kind of curl down. They used to be wrapped around the petals before the petals bloomed. And so the calyxes go rounded down as part of the flower. And its flowers shall be of one piece. So effectively, each of these lampstands is an almond flower with its petals wrapping up around where the lamp is going to be placed, with little calyxes going down underneath. So they're very decorative almond blossoms. There shall be six branches going out from its sides. So it has a central stalk or trunk, I guess we'll call it. And these six branches are going to go out. Three branches of the lampstand on one side of it. Three branches of the lampstand on the other side of it. Now, in our pictures from the first century, carvings that were made by the Romans, we know what the gigantic menorah that was in the second temple, the Temple of Herod, which was destroyed in AD 70. We know exactly what it looks like because it's represented on the Arch of Titus. It's also represented in coinage by the Jewish people and in decorations and carvings all through synagogues and houses and things like that. That menorah, the temple menorah, the three branches on each side came up and all the lamps were at the same level at the top. But that menorah was also very blocky. It looked rather heavy. It had little decorations that connected the arms in stylized ways, but it looks nothing like it has flowers at the top. That's because that menorah is not this menorah. That menorah that is represented on the Arch of Titus was probably put in place by the Maccabees after the whole abomination of desolation in the early 2nd century BC. So this original menorah was supposed to be a stylized representation of an almond tree. And I have to wonder whether or not the bottom pair of branches came out and went partway up with their little flowers, and then the next pair above that went out and up a little bit higher, maybe a little bit closer to the trunk, with its flowers at the end. And then the next two went out, maybe not quite as far, and then up to their flowers. And then you had a peak flower at the top, the seventh one. So that I think it looked a little bit like a pyramidal tree, like an almond tree with these stylized flowers at the end of each of the branches, and that's where the lampstands were put. It would have been very pretty. It would have been very delicate looking as well, because it's made out of, I think, about 75 pounds of gold. I think that's what we'll see here in a moment. All right, verse number 33, three cups made like almond blossoms, each with calyx and flower. So the flower petals go up, the calyx goes down. On one branch, three cups with made like almond blossoms, each with calyx and flower on the other branch. So for the six branches going out of the lampstand. And on the lampstand itself, there will be four cups made like almond blossoms. Excuse me, I hit a wrong button and my text moved for a moment. So on the lampstand itself, there will be four cups made like almond blossoms with their calyxes and flowers, and a calyx of one piece with it under each pair of the six branches going out from the lampstand. So that's on the stalk or the trunk going up. There's also little representations of blossoms. Their calyxes and their branches shall be of one piece with it, the whole of it, a single piece of hammered work of pure gold. Then you shall make seven lamps for it. So these are separate pieces. The lamps will be set up so as to give light on the space in front of it. Now, that just basically means that the way the lamps are designed is the wick will be toward the front, facing the inside of the tabernacle, so that the light is going forward. Its tongs and their trays shall be of pure gold. These are the things that are used to, you know, take the wick out and put a new one in, and probably the trays that are used to carry things around to do all of this. So all of that's going to be pure of gold. The people who are going to be tending to it have to carry these things around. It shall be made with all these utensils out of a talent of pure gold. There's the weight. Talent is roughly 75 pounds. So you can tell, in order to get a nice lampstand, probably 5-6 feet tall, it's going to have to be fairly delicate to be able to stretch 75 pounds of gold out to make those seven branches and still have what's needed to make seven lamps that are going to be put into the stand, and all of the utensils used to keep the light going. And then we're told in verse 40, see that you make them after the pattern for them, which is being shown you on the mountain. So God is, I think, walking Moses through this, showing him exactly what it needs to look like, because it's going to have logistical reasons for being designed this way, and symbolic reason. Now, I believe that the lampstand represents the light of God into our lives 7 days a week. I think that's the reason for the seven branches, the seven lamps. And we know in other passages that the Word of God is portrayed as a lamp unto my feet and a light unto my path. And so I believe that the last two items we've looked at are important aspects of the believer's life. We need to have the fellowship with God week by week. We need to be fed by His food. We need to drink of His drink. We need to be doing everything that we do in His light, according to His Word. And so everything in this tabernacle appears as symbolic of relationship, regular relationship with God. Chapter 26. Now, we still have one more item that goes into the most holy, or excuse me, the holy place where the menorah and the table of the bread of the presence is located, but that for some reason is not described until later, and so we'll hold off on that for right now. It's the altar of incense, the prayer altar. Instead, the next thing that Moses is told about is the fabric that is going to be draped over the three-sided frame of the tabernacle. And again, I don't know why the framework comes later, but it does. So let's talk about the fabric. And this is very logistical at the beginning here, is that we're told in chapter 26, moreover, you shall make the tabernacle with 10 curtains of fine twined linen and blue and purple and scarlet yarns. You shall make them with gerubim, skillfully worked into them. The length of each curtain will be 28 cubits. Now that's 48 feet, 3.6 inches long. The breadth of each of these curtains is 4 cubits, which is 6 feet, 10.8 inches. All the curtains are going to be exactly the same size. And then 5 curtains will be coupled to one another. And then the other 5 curtains will be coupled to one another. So you basically have panels, long panels that are made, which are then going to be sewn together into two sets of five to make big curtains. But the panels repeat their pattern. Now, what's in that pattern? Well, we know it's Kerubim, the four-faced, four-winged angels of God that are beneath his throne, which Ezekiel definitely saw, which Moses almost certainly saw for himself. These are real entities. And I believe that if you picture this long panel, right, that's 48 feet plus long, and it's only about 6 feet wide, almost 7 feet wide, you should probably picture a couple of rows of these cherubim starting at the bottom, going toward the center. Because this panel is going to be sewn to four other panels, and it's going to be draped over the top of the frame so that the cherubim are going to look like they're standing upright on the walls and then flying above the ceiling whenever you're in the holy place doing your work as a priest, or if you're the high priest, going into the Holy of Holies once a year to minister at the Ark of the Covenant. So it's almost like the tapestries that we see in castles and things in Europe. But this tapestry starts out as some long panels sewn together, and then two big curtains are going to be linked together and draped over the top. And the reason you break it down like that is because these things have to be taken apart and carried place to place. So it's logistical in form.